So your home didn't sell the first time. Are you fed up? It's time to make a change. Hire the Selling with CC team to get your home sold. We like houses to sell, not sit. To schedule an appointment, go to sellingwithcc.com.
Keller Williams, Jacksonville Realty.
The world of sports never stops spinning. Jacksonville Sports Radio is live and local even longer. Now step into the night with Joe Coward and Ryan the Hacker Green. Welcome to Rockville Presents XL Primetime on 1010XL.
And a very good Tuesday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is XL Primetime, 1010XL, 92.5 FM with Andrew Gibson. The Hacker Ryan Green with you. Joe Coward will rejoin us tomorrow night. Gibson, it's game week. It's Josh Johnson and the Washington Redskins coming to take on Cody Kessler and the Jacksonville Jaguars. It is the final home game for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and what I imagine will be the final home game for a lot of personnel, perhaps a lot of player personnel, perhaps some management personnel, perhaps some coaching personnel. But needless to say, Gibson, after this game on Sunday, the next time the home crowd sees the Jaguars in August in the preseason, there's more than likely going to be a lot of changes on this football team.
There will be a lot of changes. Good to be with you as always. And, yeah, I think you look around, Calais Campbell was asked on Monday about, you know, just the thought that this is the last few games that you're going to spend with this current construction of this team. And he said, wow, you know, it really, you really do have to sit back and think about it, because you're right. Personnel always changes. Teams turn over from year to year. No team is the same from year one to year two. And the management could certainly be different this time next year.
You know, this is a year where you're just trying to get to the finish line, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You just want to wrap things up. You want to get out of here and start the off season. Will it be the final time we see Blake Bortles in a Jaguar uniform at TIAA Bank Field? Probably.
I think so.
Barry Church, Jeremy Parnell, Malik Jackson, Marcel Darius. Really, you could go on down the line. There are a lot of guys that will probably be playing their final home game in a Jaguar uniform. What about the future of Dave Caldwell? What about the future of Doug Marrone? For that matter, what about the future of Tom Coughlin? Certainly a lot of changes on the horizon, and with good reason. When you're that close to making a Super Bowl, I told Coward this last night. For whatever reason, I guess I was bored on Saturday before the 1010XL Christmas party. I went back way back in the archives of my DVR at home, and I found the Jaguar-Steeler game in the playoffs last year, 11 months ago. And I watched that, and I compared that to what we saw Thursday night in Nashville, which was just a boat racing that the Titans gave the Jaguars. And it's really amazing how good that team was in Heinz Field in January that beat Pittsburgh in the playoffs compared to the carcass that's there now and what we saw in their performance last Thursday against the Titans.
Look, it's a lot of it is certainly chalked up to injuries. You can't lose sight of the guys that you lost this year and compare it to last year. It's just not, there's no comparison. The team that is on the field right now compared to the team that played in the AFC Championship, there's no comparison. Any team in the playoffs that the Jaguars had, they were incredibly healthy, and we knew the cycle of football does not happen that way. The biggest significant injury the Jaguars had last year was Allen Robinson. And you know, I was thinking about this. Imagine if they had Allen Robinson. Imagine if Allen Robinson had not blown his ACL in week one. They could have had the downfield presence that they needed against the Patriots in the AFC title game. But all that is for naught. It's gone now, and this team's got to rebuild.
I refuse to believe it. And look, I think more people agree with you than will agree with me. The rebuild, I think a lot of people think that's going to have to happen. And maybe I'm just putting my blinders on, but I refuse to believe a window of opportunity is only open for 1 year. Can we really be at a rebuild after you were almost in the Super Bowl in January? I mean, maybe we are. Maybe they are going to have to rebuild it. They certainly have to find a quarterback. That is first and foremost. I think everybody is of the opinion that the starting quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2019, opening day in September, is currently not on the Jaguar roster. If he is on the Jaguar roster, I think the fan base would be shocked. I know I would be shocked.
Yeah, my opinion is that the quarterback of next year is not on this roster right now. I think it's going to be a first-round rookie, and I would say that this management, whoever it might be, is going to take a rookie quarterback, and they're going to also probably look at a veteran as well to come in here and just have on the roster. But look, I think it is a rebuild because you have to reset a lot of positions. You have to reset quarterback, and you may have to reset the coaching staff, the front office. I mean, there's a lot that could certainly go on with this team.
Let me kind of set the table for you. We're going to do a lot of Jaguars tonight. About 25 minutes from now, Mike DeRocco, ESPN.com. We lovingly call him D-Rock. He will join us to look at the future of the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll take a little bit of a look at this Jaguar-Redskin matchup coming up on Sunday. Again, the final home game of the year. In the 9 o'clock hour, former Jaguar tight end George Reister will join the program as well to give his thoughts from a former playing perspective on what exactly went wrong here in Jacksonville and what there needs to be fixed. And first and foremost, I think he, like many, says the quarterback. I was listening to Frangie and his show a little bit earlier today with Hayes, and they were talking about Blake Bortles, and they were talking about how will Blake Bortles be remembered. And that was actually something I wanted to bring up tonight as well. This is probably the final home game for Blake Bortles in a Jaguar uniform. He more than likely won't play unless Cody Kessler gets hurt, but this is probably it for number 5 in a teal, black, or white uniform with a Jaguar logo. And with that, I want to kind of open up the phone lines here. We like to do that in the 8 o'clock hour on Tuesday nights. 641-1010 is the phone number, Jacksonville, 641-1010. If you want to get involved in the program tonight here on XL Primetime, how will Jaguar fans remember Blake Bortles? Will it all be negative? Will 5 years down the road, Gibson, when you and I are in this studio talking about Jaguar games and Jaguar personnel of the past, and we bring up Blake Bortles, will it be much like Blaine Gabbert? Will it be much like Byron Leftwich and you just rip the guy for being a first-round bust? Is there anything positive that Jaguar fans will remember from Blake Bortles? I can tell you this. I don't know how many Jaguar fans care, but the work Blake Bortles is doing with that foundation here in town, the money that's being raised to help the family of that police officer,
yeah,
or those police officers that were injured, unfortunately, one that lost their life and that what appears to be a DUI incident on I-95. Blake Bortles is a good guy. He's a good guy. I don't know if you can say that about Blaine Gabbert. I did not really enjoy Blaine Gabbert when
he was here.
I thought Blaine Gabbert was a jerk when he was here. I don't believe Blake Bortles is a jerk. And I'm just curious if that matters to Jaguar fans. Is it going to be a complete rip show 5-10 years down the road when you talk about Blake? Or will there be good things remembered like the playoff run of 2017?
Yeah, I think it's totally different from Gabbert because, yeah, both guys were bust in the top five, but Gabbert sucked and was a jerk. So that's why people do not look at the Gabbert era fondly because of that. Blake, not very good, had his good moments here and there, but he's a really good guy. And I think you can respect that about him, but here's the thing. At the end of the day with Blake Bortles, he was a top three pick. He was a third overall pick. And when you draft a quarterback third overall, you expect multiple Super Bowls.
You're right about that. Here's my thing with first-round busts. And I go back to Tyson Alualu in 2010. A lot of Jaguar fans couldn't stand Tyson Alualu because he wasn't named Tim Tebow. And the Jaguars took Tyson Alualu, number 10 overall, in the 2010 NFL draft. Tyson Alualu didn't tell the Jaguars to draft him. Tyson Alualu didn't beg Jacksonville to draft him. That was Gene Smith that did that. All right, so you don't necessarily hate the player as much as you hate the guy or not like the decision the guy made that did it, which was the general manager. Now, Dante Fowler hadn't worked out, and Luke Jokel hadn't worked out, and Blake Bortles hadn't worked out. It's not necessarily their fault. Maybe in Dante's case, he could have done some better stuff off the field. But they didn't ask. They didn't raise their hand and say, Jacksonville, please draft me. That was a decision made by Dave Caldwell. Unfortunately, those decisions have not bore fruit here over the last couple of years.
And I'll tell you this. Dave Caldwell is a good guy, but I don't know how many general managers have the rope that Dave Caldwell's had. I mean, look at this. I mean, Jokel, flame out, number 2 overall pick.
Jokel's not in the league anymore, I don't think.
No, he's not. He's not in the league, and he was a second overall pick. bust out of the league. Dante Fowler, not on the team anymore. He was a third overall pick. Blake Bortles, most likely third overall pick, not going to be on the team. I mean, how many chances do you get to screw it up or get it right in the first round? Look, Jalen Ramsey, fifth overall pick, pretty solid pick. But that's one out of, what, five?
Yeah, and what's crazy is he had all those early picks in round one, yet he did get Brandon Linder, and he did get Ngakoue, and he did get, well, up until this year, Telvin, although I still think Telvin's a good pick for the fifth rounder. He just hasn't had a very good year. But we'll get to the phone lines in just a moment, Jacksonville. 641-1010. You, as a Jaguar fan, if this is Blake Bortles' final home game on Sunday against the Redskins down at the stadium, how will you remember Blake Bortles? The thing to me about Blake Gibson, he won't be out of a job very long. If the Jaguars ultimately release him, I think he'll be signed. I think he'll be on a roster next year, and it would not surprise me if on down the line Blake Bortles had another opportunity to start for another NFL team. I mean, let's face it, Blaine Gabbert has numerous starts under his belt since he left Jacksonville. If Blaine Gabbert can do that, I think Blake Bortles will have every opportunity to see the field again in some other market.
He will. And look, to the point about it wasn't Blake's fault. No, it's certainly not Blake's fault. I mean, it's Dave Caldwell's fault for drafting him, putting him in that spot that he may not have deserved to be there. Of course he didn't, because he just hasn't lived up to it. But, you know, Blake is one of those guys where it just seemed like, man, everything had to go right. And it did last year. Everything went right pretty much. For the most part, it went right, and they got to the AFC Championship game. My point is, when you draft a quarterback third overall, right or wrong, you expect multiple Super Bowls, and they got to an AFC Championship game. That's a great accomplishment. That's nice, but it's not a Super Bowl.
We're about 20 minutes away from Mike DiRocco, ESPN.com. Before we get there, let's open up the phone lines like we like to do on Tuesday evenings here on XL Primetime. 641-1010 is the phone number. We will begin tonight by going out to Argyle. Let's get Caleb up here on XL Primetime. Caleb, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Caleb, we're good, brother. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, so two things. Number one, it's a legitimate question. How many records does Bortles have with the franchise?
I think he's number two in many departments, number three in others. Right, as it stands right now, the 25-year history of the franchise, he's basically top three in every category.
I think he has six records.
Yeah.
I'm going to confirm that, but I believe he has six records.
I cringe with his throwing mechanics, and I definitely see his flaws in that, but I still like him. I still think he's a gamer, and I wonder how much coaching has helped or hurt him in his development to be the guy.
Okay, well, appreciate the phone call. I think it's a valid point. He's had numerous offensive coordinators. Here's Blake Bortles' numbers all time. He has started 72 games in a Jaguar uniform. He has thrown for exactly 17,500 yards, 103 touchdowns, 74 picks. I'll tell you right now, your plus 29 touchdown to interception ratio, you've thrown for 17,500 yards. Gibson, I don't know how you can consider that to be a bust. Now, being the third overall pick, he probably will be considered one. But man alive, those aren't terrible numbers.
Yeah, they're not. But your quarterback drafted third overall, I'm not drafting you to be solid. You know, I'm drafting you to be Andrew Luck, Drew Brees, somebody like that that's got to get you to the promised land. And look, he almost did it. But, you know, if you're a general manager in this league, you can't say, well, I almost got it done. No, you get fired if you don't get it done.
See if you can pull up Brunell, Bortles, Garrard. Those are the top three. I think those are the top three in every quarterback category. Obviously, those are the three that have played the most games for the Jaguars. We'll kind of do a compare and contrast of those three quarterbacks in Jaguar history. Back to the phone lines here on a Tuesday on XL Primetime. Let's go to Michael on 1010XL. Michael, what's going on?
Hey guys. How y'all doing?
Michael, we're wonderful, brother. How are you?
Good, thank you. Listen, I just heard what you said, and everybody, you need Blake Bortles to be like, I don't know, probably Aaron Rodgers. But my point is, if Blake Bortles had time to develop later in his career, he would have been fine. He would have been really good.
And Michael, let me ask you this. You say time to develop. I agree. He's had the raw end of a lot of offensive coordinators, a lot of different philosophies. The guy has started 72 games. I mean, that's a lot of starts in Blake Bortles' career. I defended Blake to the hills and back, but there was no defense for what he did the final couple games as a starting quarterback here.
No, but that's what I'm saying. His offense has been banged up. The defense has been talking trash, like, nonstop. Especially Jalen Ramsey. That's all he does. And they just can't move anything.
All right, Michael, fair enough. There's a Blake supporter. I think you got more Blake supporters now than maybe you ever did beforehand. I think a lot of that has to do with what he did last year in that playoff run. But, yeah, Gibson, you know this as well as anybody. What was my line always was about Blake Bortles? He's not as bad as people here in Jacksonville. Some people here in Jacksonville want to make him out to be. Unfortunately, that line was no good towards the last couple games of his starting career because he was terrible the last few games he started here.
Yeah, he was. And look, he got benched for Cody Kessler. And what have the Jaguars done since Cody Kessler got in the game? It's not been a whole lot.
I argued with Joe about this last night. And by argued, I mean it was a fellowship. It was camaraderie. A little heated between Cowart and I. Last three games, if you want to win these next three, give your team the best chance, I say put Bortles back in there. He's better than Cody Kessler. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he is, but you stand the risk of Blake getting hurt and then not being able to pass a physical next year, and then you're out a ton of money.
And that's probably a large part as to what they're thinking.
I think that's why they're doing it. I think that's exactly why they're doing it.
I mean, Cody Kessler, nothing against Cody. I'm not trying to rip the guy. But in eight quarters, they've scored one meaningless touchdown when they were down 28.
Yeah, what, 7-yard touchdown?
Yeah, that's what they've done in eight quarters. They've scored 15 points. They're averaging, what, 1.75 points per quarter with Cody Kessler. That's not exactly going
to
get it done.
I think it got to the point where, okay, we realize that we're not in the playoffs anymore. It's time to turn it over to Kessler and just let Blake ride it out. We know we're not going to keep him. And, look, we can't risk putting him out there, him getting hurt and not being able to pass a physical next year for whoever he signs with, because the Jaguars are going to have to eat a ton of money by releasing Blake Bortles, but that would be lessened a little bit if he signed somewhere else.
How about this? All-time yardage, passing yardage in a Jaguar uniform. Mark Brunell, number one.
Yep.
25,698 yards. Blake Bortles, two. David Garrard, three. Touchdowns. Mark Brunell, 144. That's number one all time. Blake Bortles, two at 103. David Garrard, third at 89. Completion percentage, David Garrard is actually number one in franchise history. 61.6. Brunell, 60.4. Bortles, 59.3. But those are the three guys. When you talk about quarterbacks in Jaguar franchise history, a quarter century in, Brunell, Bortles, Garrard, probably in that order in most of the stats.
Yeah, but I think that, and that's great. I mean, it's a great accomplishment for Blake for being up there with two of the most known and well-regarded quarterbacks in franchise history. But in this day and age where we throw it so much in the NFL, those numbers are going to be broken over and over again. I mean, Deshaun Watson is going to break Texans records, is right now breaking Texans records of all time. You know, Cam Newton has broken Panthers records. The Jaguars and the Panthers came into the league in the same year. So this era of football, you're going to see those record books rewritten over and over again.
Yeah, it'll take 3 or 4 years. But, yeah, Blake won't stay up there very long. I'm not going to use the word indictment of the franchise because I loved Brunell. I loved Garrard. I thought they were great. They both have playoff wins under their belt. Brunell got Jacksonville to two AFC championship games. David Garrard got the Jaguars to the playoffs twice. 25 years in, and those are your three quarterbacks? I don't know, man. I mean, I think if you look around the league, 25 years in, when your leading passer is thrown for 25,000 yards, it's probably going to be pretty low on the list.
All right, who has been more disappointing in those years, the Jaguar quarterbacks or post-Tebow Gators?
Wow, that's very interesting. The post-Tebow Gators, just awful.
Yeah.
Just awful. You know, Skylar Morningwig and Treon Harris, Jeff Driscoll, who ironically enough is in the NFL now, Will Greer, who's going to be in the NFL.
Yes.
Jacoby Brissett, who's in the NFL.
Will Greer all these guys, his
game. Yeah, all these guys are in the NFL.
Trey
they all
Burton
transferred
in
out.
The NFL.
Yeah, Trey Burton. Tyler Murphy did get drafted or did get a cup of coffee with the Steelers. But, yeah, the post-Tebow quarterbacks in Gainesville have been awful. Maybe Felipe Franks is going to change that narrative.
Maybe.
The last two and a half games were pretty good. Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's get Adam in San Marco here on XL Primetime. Adam, go ahead.
What's up, boys?
Adam, how are you, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'll tell you exactly how Blake Bortles will be remembered to me anyways as a 32-year-old Jaguar fan, having tickets since he was 18. He'll be remembered as Matt.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's it, man. I mean, somebody that gave us a great run, you know, I don't know. I always say we went on a great run last year in spite of Bortles, but he did play well. But he'll be so – I mean, it's not like you're naming off the quarterback tree that we've had in Jacksonville. I mean, what a wow factor that is. So I think in the short term in history, it'll be, whatever, Blake Bortles. We had a good run that one year. And I think 25 years down the road, it'll be, Blake Bortles, you know. So that's how I think it'll be, boys.
All right, Adam, appreciate it, man. Thank you for listening. Here are the – I love going down memory lane. The Jaguar quarterbacks that have thrown for 1,000 career yards in a Jaguar uniform, at least 1,000 career yards. We mentioned Brunell, Bortles, Garrard. Fourth on that list, Byron Leftwich, 9,042. Fifth on that list, Chad Henne, 5,817. Number six is the aforementioned Blaine Gabbert, 4,357. And the only other guy to throw for 1,000 career yards in a Jaguar uniform, Quinn Gray.
Wow.
1,252. After that, you got the likes of Steve Berline, Jonathan Quinn, Jamie Martin, Jay Fiedler. Cody Kessler has worked his way into 12th place all-time on the Jaguar throwing list, just ahead of Luke McCown, Rob Johnson, and who can forget Trent Edwards and Steve Matthews' contributions to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Where did Todd Bauman rank?
Todd Bauman, 17th all-time.
Off the tractor.
At 222. The last guy mentioned, Logan Cook. Number 27 on the list.
I don't know, man.
With 4 yards passing because of the fake field goal.
That's on par to me with the post-Tebow Gators. It really is.
It's not good. It's not good.
And somebody asked me, what's Blake's record? 24-49.
Wow, is that right?
Yeah.
And, you know, 12 of those wins came last year. Half of his victories in a Jaguar uniform came in 2017. So it probably will be Blake's final game in a Jaguar uniform, at least at home. Jaguars' final home game against Washington, Josh Johnson on the Redskins' side, Cody Kessler on the Jaguars' side. For what it's worth, the Redskins, even though, Gibson, they're on life support, they still have somewhat of playoff hopes. Now, they're on their fourth quarterback. They've been just decimated. But wouldn't you know it, Josh Johnson's a guy that scrambles around a little bit, which has certainly been the Jaguars' Achilles heel as of late.
Do you have a scouting report on Josh Johnson?
I know that he played for Jim Harbaugh
yeah.
at the University of San Diego. I also know he was the number one pick in the quarterback draft
the AAF.
Of the Alliance of American Football.
He's solid.
So a lot of people, Josh Johnson, you know who he played against in college?
No.
Played against JU.
Wow.
JU and San Diego were in the same division back then. So Josh Johnson's old. He's an old man. I mean, when you play for Harbaugh, before Harbaugh even went to Stanford, you know you're up there in years. But, yeah, it will be interesting. Washington and Jacksonville.
How about Adrian Peterson
on Sunday?
Coming in.
Adrian Peterson, Calais Campbell. I know they talked to Campbell, was it yesterday or today?
Yeah.
About AP, the two old men. I mean, two of the oldest players in the NFL. AP at 33 years of age. This will absolutely be the final time Jaguar fans get to see Adrian Peterson in an NFL game. So that alone should give you reason to go down to the stadium on Sunday to take it in.
Yeah, I was looking at some numbers today. Adrian Peterson needs 112 yards to pass Eric Dickerson for 8th all-time in rushing yards.
Wow, you just hope that doesn't happen on Sunday.
Well,
if Adrian Peterson has a buck 12 on the ground, odds are the Jaguars are probably not winning that game.
Well, if they tackle like they did Thursday night against Derrick Henry, he'll have it in the first half.
That's a good point. There's no question about that. It is XL primetime. 1010XL, 92.5 FM. We will talk to Mike DiRocco, ESPN.com, coming up in a matter of moments. But as you know, in the month of May, Welcome to Rockville returns to Jacksonville's Metropolitan Park May 3rd, May 4th, and May 5th. For tickets Go to welcome2rockvillefestival.com. That's welcome2rockvillefestival.com. The lineup, as you know, is awesome. Tool, Korn, Rob Zombie, Shinedown, The Prodigy, Judas Priest, Incubus, just to name a few. It is going to be the biggest party of the summer, May 3rd, 4th, and 5th at Jacksonville's Metropolitan Park. Tickets on sale, welcome2rockvillefestival.com, or you can simply be caller 4 right now at 641-1010, and JJ will hook you up with a pair of general admission tickets to the 2019 edition of Welcome to Rockville. Caller 4, 641-1010. Mike DiRocco, ESPN.com, talking Jags and Redskins. That's next on XL Primetime.
XL Primetime, presented by Welcome to Rockville on 1010XL.
XL Primetime, 1010XL, 92.5 FM, Tuesday night in Jacksonville, Florida. And we are glad you are with us. The Jaguars getting ready for their home finale at TIAA Bank Field. It's the matchup we all anticipated back in the preseason. Josh Johnson of the Washington Redskins taking on Cody Kessler of the Jacksonville Jaguars. With that as a backdrop, let's welcome in my friend Mike DiRocco, ESPN.com. Always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL Radio. D-Rock, how are you, my friend?
Sentences you never thought you would say. Josh Johnson versus Cody Kessler.
Boy, Josh Johnson and Cody Kessler, Mike. What a ball game. What an atmosphere. It should be on Sunday down at the stadium. We'll talk about the game in a moment, but let's talk about the horror show that was Nashville, the fallout from the Leonard Fournette sideline incident. I mean, what did you make of everything that's transpired over the last 3 or 4 days, Mike?
The thing about the Fournette thing, I was ready to, you know, really be extremely critical of you know, his behavior and attitude. But then when he said there were some racial slurs being yelled, I kind of understood maybe why he was a little bit upset. Although Clayus Campbell did say, look, in it's unfortunate that has to happen, or that happens in 2018, but you kind of have to, you know, put that out of your mind and not let people get to you doing that from the fans. But still, it's just another bizarre incident to what can only be described as, only be described as a bizarre season, because you add in that, you add in the suspension for the fighting, you add in his 6 games with the hamstring, you add in the just total demise of the offense and the debacle in Tennessee, which was, I believe, is more embarrassing than the one in 2016. It's like this season cannot get over soon enough for this franchise.
No, I completely agree with that. I mean, most disappointing season in franchise history. I don't think there's any question about that. Look, Cody Kessler, the last time I talked to you, we were waiting to see what Cody Kessler would do. It's been 2 games now, the win against Indianapolis, the miraculous 6-0 victory, and then what we saw in Tennessee. What have your thoughts been about the 8 quarters we've seen of Cody Kessler?
One offensive touchdown, and that's not all on Kessler, obviously. You know, there's the other issues that we have well-documented all year, but you know, I don't see more production out of the pass game than with Bortles. I see less passes off target for sure, and I see, you know, Kessler getting rid of the ball quicker. But, you know, in terms of offensive production, the only offensive touchdown came when Tennessee was in prevent, and, you know, they were sitting back and letting the Jags complete passes. So I don't see any – I don't want to say I don't see any hope for this offense of being able to score anything consistently, but honestly, after the last 2 weeks, I mean, what can you expect? I mean, 1 touchdown in 2 games, I just don't, you know, even with Fournette in the lineup, I just don't see any reason to believe that this offense is going to be able to put anything together. I think asking for 2 touchdowns, anything more than 2 touchdowns, this week against the Redskins is probably asking for too much, to be honest with you.
Mike DiRocco, ESPN.com. D-Rock, would it matter who's back there at quarterback? Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, all right. But a majority of the quarterbacks in the league, with the skill personnel and the offensive line that are currently on the Jaguar offense, could any quarterback do anything with these guys the last 3 games?
Yeah, I mean, throwing out the obvious guys. I mean, I think it just depends. I think they probably would be, like, if you're asking me, would they be a little bit more efficient? Would they have a little bit more yards, a little more points with Ryan Tannehill? I'd probably say yes. I just think that, you know, it reminds me, Hack, and tell me if I'm wrong, but it reminds me of 2014. They had a really good run in that first half of that season opener against the Eagles, and then after that it was non-functional. I mean, it reminds me of that. That's why they went to Bortles when they did. But, I mean, yeah, would a little bit better quarterback play have helped? Sure. Would they have scored – would they have beaten the Titans with Kirk Cousins back there? Yeah, probably not. Not after what the Titans did to that Jaguars defense. But, look, the issues we've talked about, the offensive line, the lack of playmakers, now the running game's not even really working very well either. So – it's just a term that we used before we came on the air is really the most apt description of that offense. And
it's a term we cannot repeat, Mike. How about that?
I'll let people figure that out. But you know, the second part of it refers to like a show. Let's go with that.
I'll go with eight letters and there's two S's. You figure that one out.
But yeah, I mean, I don't. Yeah, I mean, another quarterback may have made a difference all year, sure. But the last couple of games, I don't know. I just think that this offense is beyond fixing at this point, and it's just, let's get to the end of the season, get everybody out of here, and then figure out what the heck we're going to do from there on.
And, Mike, I want to talk about what the future holds. But before we get there, the next three games, Washington this week, at Miami, at Houston. What, if anything, can be salvaged? What, if anything, can be learned moving forward?
Well, you want to see some of the young guys progress, and you know, we've seen some flashes from Ronnie Harrison for sure, and we saw a lot more of Taven Bryan last week. So from that standpoint, you want to see that. I think if you're the Jags, you're still taking a look at some of those offensive linemen, you know, because you've got to retool that whole unit in terms of the backups and what you're going to do. You want to see some positives from Eric Flowers. You want to see, you know, D.D. Westbrook continued to kind of make some plays. I think he's kind of become their best playmaker on the edge, which, you know, I mean, he's been okay. Need to see it more consistently. And you'd like to see something out of those other tight ends, Blake Bell, that maybe leads you to believe that, yeah, maybe he can fit into this equation next year. But other than that, really, you just want to get through the season as quickly and as healthily as possible. Now, they have a really good chance to beat the Redskins this week. They're 7.5-point favorites. At least they open that way. So you would think they should be able to win that game. And then if you go into the finale, you know, and the Texans have something on the line, maybe you could, you know, play spoiler there. But really, there's nothing left to accomplish. You know, guys are talking about playing for pride. I think if you're Doug Marrone, you want to win at least two of those games to kind of solidify yourself as a guy that should come back next year. But really, you know, this is a situation this franchise has been in all too often over the last decade, where it's like you're playing out the string and trying to figure out what the heck they can do to fix it.
Mike DiRocco, ESPN.com. All right, Mike, let's get down to it. This is the final home game of the 2018 season. Is this the final home game, in your opinion, for the likes of Dave Caldwell and or Doug Marrone?
I don't think Doug Marrone is going to be fired. I do believe that you can blame some of this on the injuries, especially along the offensive line. But I also think you can sit there and say, you know what, a lot of this blame for this goes on Coughlin's shoulders. Coughlin's the one who signed off on the Bortles extension. Coughlin is the one who drafted Leonard Fournette. And Coughlin is the guy who selected four guys in the top four rounds this year that you really didn't want to have contribute until 2019 because you thought this franchise was ready to win a Super Bowl without any help. So Doug's a good coach. I do believe that. And he got them to the AFC title game last year. Now, have there been some problems with discipline? Absolutely. Have there been some problems with some on-field deal with all the penalties leading the league and personal foul penalties? Absolutely, and that stuff's got to change. But he did lead them less than a year ago to an AFC title game and led them to their first division title since 07. So I think he's done enough, you know, to warrant a second shot at it. you know, but there will be a lot of pressure on him next year. Now, as for Caldwell, again, it just depends on how much Shad decides to place the blame on Coughlin or Caldwell. All the football decisions get stamped by Coughlin. If Coughlin didn't want to pursue Andrew Norwell as a free agent, and they wouldn't have pursued Andrew Norwell. If Coughlin wasn't okay with them signing Moncrief, they wouldn't have done it. So, to be honest with you, some of it depends on, you know, what power Shad is giving Coughlin to make changes, because we know that poop flows downhill, as they like to say, and Coughlin's not going to fire himself. So if there have to be significant changes at the top, then I would guess that if one of those three is going, it's probably going to be Caldwell. But I do think that Coughlin and Marone at least will get another chance to kind of fix this, get it right, and make another run.
You know, Mike, it's interesting you said that. I'm almost happy that you did. We did two segments last night on XL Primetime, taking phone callers of people ripping Caldwell. And my point then was, well, yeah, some of it might be Caldwell, but why is Coughlin getting a pass from the fans? And I think it's very simple. The fans love TC. And look, I love TC. I think he's been great for the community, great for the organization, but I completely agree with you. I think some of the falters of this team do lay on Tom Coughlin's shoulders.
Well, I mean, absolutely. Last year, everybody in the world, every time I did a radio show nationally, the question was, how much praise does Coughlin deserve for this? And my whole thing was like, look, he deserves some, absolutely, but so does Marone and so does Dave Caldwell. I mean, yeah, have Dave Caldwell's first-round draft picks not been great, with the exception of Jalen Ramsey? Yeah, but he also found Telvin Smith in the fifth round. Now, that's probably not a good thing now, because he's having probably the worst year of his career. But he ended up with Telvin Smith. He signed Brandon Linder. He drafted Brandon Linder. He drafted Miles Jack.
He got Ngakoue in round three.
He drafted Ngakoue. Yeah. He went out and did the free agency deal that landed those guys, Boye and Calais Campbell. And again, that was with Coughlin's approval. But, you know, has Caldwell hit on every first-round pick? No. And I'm not making excuses for him, because he has to do better. But Coughlin is the final say. When you give someone the final say on football matters, then every decision that's made regarding to the football team falls on their desk. And I think he deserves as much blame this year as he got credit last year. And we'll see how it goes. I mean, we don't know what Shad's thinking. That's the thing, is none of us really know what Shad Khan is thinking. Shad Khan in the past has shown unbelievable patience with Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley. I mean, they fired Gus Bradley a year too late, to be honest with you. So maybe he looks at it and says, you know what? We went to the AFC title game last year. We had a crud ton of injuries, especially on the offensive line. And when you look at it, you look at those injuries and you go, okay, they're starting Eric Flowers, who the Giants gave up on. We're starting Patrick Omame. We've had to start Chris Reed. We've had to start Tyler Shatley. These are guys, most of those guys are on the team. You sign those guys with the hopes that they never have to play for you. That's the deal with backup offensive linemen. You sign them because you never want to have them on the field, but you feel like if we do, they're at least, not completely terrible. You know what I mean? No one has good offensive line depth, but that's what they're working with. So, you know, did they make a bunch of mistakes in personnel? Absolutely. But they feel, you know, if Shad sits there and says, we had all those injuries on the offensive line, okay, we blew the quarterback, but he was okay with the quarterback extension too. Let's not forget that. If he's willing to sit there and say, okay, there are all these extraneous reasons for this slide, I still believe in Coughlin, I still believe in Doug, then those guys will be back. But again, none of us know what Shad is thinking, because he keeps that stuff extremely close to the vest.
Final moments here with Mike DiRocco of ESPN.com. All right, DiRoc, just a couple of minutes left. Let's go rapid fire. That's the management and the coaching. Let's talk about the veterans. Blake Bortles, do you believe he'll be back in 2019?
I do not. I think he's done, and I think he knows he's done, and I think that's probably the best for both parties. I think he will benefit from a fresh start somewhere else.
How will he be remembered when Mike DiRocco's on XL Primetime 5 years from now and we bring up Blake Bortles? Is it going to be all negative?
No. I mean, look, he's a great guy. He's been fantastic in this community. What he's just done recently, helping match those donations for the sheriff's office and bailiff who, you know, were in that horrific accident, drunk driving accident last weekend. I mean, that's phenomenal. What he's done for the arc of Jacksonville, phenomenal. And when you look back at his numbers, there aren't many guys in the league that will have lasted 5 years as a starter or 4.5 years as a starter throw 100 touchdown passes. His numbers aren't going to be completely terrible in the grand scheme of things. Did he struggle at the end? Absolutely. But I don't think we'll go back 10, 15, 20 years from now and look back and go, God, he was a terrible quarterback. You'll just go, you know what? It didn't work out. He was average to below average. And I'm doing a story next week. You look around the league and you sit there and say, wow, they got to land their next franchise quarterback. Well, that's not easy. Look at the Dolphins. How many years have they tried to land a franchise quarterback? And they don't even like the one they've got now, who is not bad. I mean, you look at Tannehill's numbers, he's not bad. He's average to above average. That's mostly what you have in the NFL.
Well, it looks like it took Cleveland 20 years to find theirs.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it's not easy. People think just draft a quarterback and then everything's fine. Well, they did that in 14 and it didn't work out. But, you know, he was stuck with a bad team and he didn't get better beyond a certain level. And, you know, it didn't work out. But he got him to and helped get him to an AFC title game, and he deserves some praise for that.
All right, Mike, final question. Jeremy Parnell, Malik Jackson, Barry Church, those seem like the obvious veterans that will not be back. A, do you agree with those three? And B, are there any other veterans that might be playing their final home game on Sunday?
Yeah, I agree with those three. I don't think, obviously, you know, Yeldon and Can probably aren't going to be back. Their contracts expire. I'm not 100% sold on Tashaun Gibson being back, but I do feel like, you know, he has a chance to be back. If it's me and I'm the Jags, I'm trying to keep Calais Campbell and Marcell Dareus, but it wouldn't surprise me if they let Dareus go. I would probably, if you put a gun to my head and say keep one of the two, I would probably keep Dareus. That's just me. But I think they're trying to work out some sort of a deal with both of those guys. Renegotiate type of thing, see if they can get some salary cap relief there. But it wouldn't surprise me if one of those guys is gone as well.
Mike DeRocco, ESPN.com. DeRock on Sunday, Josh Johnson and Cody Kessler, my man. I am excited to sit in the press box with you and watch what should be a stimulating ball game.
You watch. It's going to be 31-30. That's the way the league's gone this year. We're going to end up watching that game. It'll be 31-30. It'll be the most exciting game of the entire day. You watch.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it, Mike. I'll see you Sunday, my friend.
Thanks, Hack.
Always appreciate Mike DeRocco, ESPN.com, for joining us here on XL Primetime. What about the veterans that may be playing their final home game? Are you in agreement? Parnell, Jackson, Church, for sure, are going to be gone. That's a Church, I mean, he's a healthy scratch
right
at this point. You know he's out the door. Logical thinking says Parnell and Jackson, too. What about Campbell? What about Dareus, guys of that sort?
I honestly believe that Campbell and Dareus will be back next year. I think they may have to restructure a little bit. But when you take into account, you know, the release of potentially Parnell, Church, Malik Jackson, that's going to free up a significant amount of dollars for the Jaguars to work with. And I do believe, I think at least, you know, from what we talked about last week, with the amount of money that it has to be allocated for Campbell, Dareus, and Malik Jackson, I believed at least one or two of those guys has to be gone, and I think it's going to be Malik Jackson.
T.J. Yeldon, A.J. Cann, their final home games?
I think yes for T.J. Yeldon. Not sure on Cann. I think the Jaguars can probably upgrade there, but, I mean, look, he's been the most steady, most consistent guy to me, at least the one that's healthy right now on this offensive line.
I think it's a shame. Yeldon probably won't be back. I agree that I don't think he's going to return in 2019. But I've said all year, and I think you're in agreement with me, based on the injuries and everything that's happened, if you were to name an offensive MVP, it's probably T.J. Yeldon.
It is, and T.J. Yeldon's brought it every single game. And look, for the style of offense the NFL is running, most teams are running in this day and age where the running back has to be able to catch the ball out of the backfield and they throw it so much. T.J. Yeldon's perfect for today's NFL.
That is Andrew Gibson. I'm the Hacker Ryan Green. You are the city of Jacksonville, and we're glad you're with us on a Tuesday night here on XL Primetime. Former Jaguar George Reister coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. More on the Jaguars, a little NFL talk, a little college football playoff talk. George is a man of many talents, and he has really embraced social media. He has his own website, unafraidshow.com. Spent many years here in Jacksonville, so we'll talk the former Jaguar tight end George Reister, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Coming up next, we'll shift gears into the college game, into the high school game. We'll talk Mandarin, we'll talk Reigns, we'll talk a little Florida and Florida State as well. Glad you're with us on a Tuesday. XL Primetime, 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
XL Primetime, presented by Welcome to Rockville on 1010 XL.
On the doorstep of the 9 o'clock hour with Andrew Gibson, the hacker Ryan Green with you. Glad you're with us. XL Primetime rolls on. 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. So Gibson, I kind of let the cat out of the bag on Facebook and social media on Saturday. But very surreal. I never thought I was going to get married. You knew the married hacker. You didn't know the eligible bachelor hacker when I considered myself to be the mayor of Jacksonville Beach. I mean, I was running and ripping and getting after it and enjoying the time. And then I met Heidi, and it was great, you know. And now we've been married 3.5 years, been with her for 5 years. So getting married was a huge step for me. But never in my wildest dreams did I ever think that I was actually going to be the father of a child. Come to find out, I am.
Wow.
In May, we're due with a baby boy, as a matter of fact. We found that out a couple days ago.
What's the name situation?
Will Hacker?
Well, I assume most of the listeners, people here at the station, it's going to be Little Hacker. I'm probably going to refer to him as the dude.
The dude.
So, but we have a name picked out, but we're not going, you know, public with that yet. We're still deliberating that one.
So Andrew it is.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, man, it's very surreal. And I'm, a lot of guys listening, I'm sure, can remember the exact moment when you go into that doctor's office, man, and you see that ultrasound, and holy cow, if there's not a heart beating, it's like, whoa. I mean,
it just got real.
Life is now in perspective in a big, big way. So, yeah, May, I think, 23rd, somewhere in that area. Timed it perfectly, by the way. Not football season.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely terrific for
that
for
is.
Me.
That is.
You know, high five on that one. Fist pound on that one.
Good job.
But, yeah, it's got a lot of, you know, positive things from people on Facebook and whatnot, which I appreciate. But, yeah, we wanted to wait for a while till we were certain and this, that, and the other, and found out it was a baby boy a couple days ago.
Well, congratulations, man. I'm happy for you. That's a big move. That's a big step in life.
There's no question about it. Very, very surreal. So, yeah, well, more information on that when it comes, but we're probably about 4.5, 5 months away from things really getting real in the Hacker household.
Let me ask you real quick.
Yeah.
How are the dogs going to do with the baby?
We're certain the little one, Rue, the puppy, the 2-year-old, will be fine.
Are they going to be jealous?
Probably. I think there's going to be some jealousy there, but I think ultimately the puppy's going to be fine. The older one, I think, might get pissed because the older one, in her old age, she's probably 8 or 9 now. She's a little more ornery than she used to be. Barking a little more than she used to. So we're curious to see how that happens. Yeah, I honestly don't know. I'm hoping for the best in that situation, but I don't think we're actually going to find out until we bring the dude or Little Hacker home and establish that as another human being in the household.
One other thing I was going to ask you about that, because now I'm not a parent, sometime will be, but not now, and you're about to be.
Not that you know of, anyway.
Not that I know of, yeah. That's a very, very accurate point. Every parent says, you know, we'd be happy with whatever we have, but did you want a boy? Did you want a girl? What was your...
We know what he wanted.
I wanted a boy.
I would think.
I think any guy wants a boy. Now, had I wrapped my mind around the fact of a baby girl? Of course. My mother wanted my brother to be a girl, wanted me to be a girl, desperately wanted to be have a daughter. So my mom kind of got the short end of the stick, but she's thrilled. I think Heidi wanted a girl. I think, you know, girls want girls and boys want boys.
If this was a girl instead of a boy, how strict of a father would you be if you had a girl?
I was convinced I was going to go to prison when she was 16. I would have been that guy. I'd been joking around with my wife about that. I would have been a nervous wreck. It's a complete double standard, but hey, I got a boy, so More power to you, man. You know, we'll get out there and get after it. Got a lot of shoes to fill when it comes to what I did out at the beach back in the day. But no, I would have been perfectly happy with a little girl. But that's you see the heartbeat, right? And then they tell you, do you want to know the sex of the baby? And we had thought about it. Do we really want to know, or do we want to wait? But I couldn't wait 5 months, man. I had to know. If you can tell, man, I want to know. I want to hear it. And then when she said, you're going to have a son, it was like,
that's awesome.
Wow.
Did you ever think about doing like what do they do, like the surprise?
The gender reveals?
Yeah.
We thought about it.
I have a friend.
Is daddy happy? Remember that?
Yeah.
I have a friend who is now, he and his wife, a college buddy, he and his wife are now having their second child. And we asked him, are you going to do a gender reveal? And he goes, no, because those things mess up. I didn't know that.
They mess up
a lot. Like, I mean, could you imagine you're having a girl and it turns blue?
Yeah. Well, what we did is we actually did a gender reveal for her parents, because my mother, me, Heidi, we all found out via the ultrasound, but Heidi's parents are in Maine. They're in New England.
Right.
So what we did is one of the shops up there, you can get the cupcakes, either the blue icing or the pink icing. So for her parents, that's what we did. And we had them on FaceTime. So when they bit into the cupcake, it was blue icing. And
no,
her,
that's cool.
Her dad went nuts. Kind of like I did. He was all sorts of excited. How about this on the text line? The 444, at Memorial right now, having a baby girl.
Wow.
Congrats, Hacker.
How about that?
That's terrific, 444. Best of luck to you. That
is
absolutely.
Is she texting us? I'm assuming he is.
I would imagine that's the father. But congratulations, my man, at Memorial now having a baby girl. And, so in May, little Hacker will be arriving. All right, Saturday night. Camping World Stadium in Orlando. In fact, in the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to hear from both Duran Wiley, the head coach of Reigns, and Bobby Ramsey, the head coach of Mandarin. But Gibson, you were in Orlando calling Mandarin and Columbus. Great game. I thought it was awesome. Our boy Kyle here at the station, we were at Colhane's for the Christmas party for 1010XL. He got the stream and hooked it up to the big screen TV.
Yeah.
So we're watching the Mandarin game at the Christmas party. We were all getting into it, even our boss man, Steve Griffin, everybody. We were all rooting for Mandarin. You were at Camping World Stadium. What was the atmosphere like?
It was awesome. Mandarin was the visiting team, so we were on the opposite side of the field. And so we were away from the Mandarin stands. Great turnout by Mandarin. Columbus had a huge contingent come up from Miami. And the atmosphere was great. It was the final game, final championship game, 8 o'clock start. It was awesome, man. It was great.
You're 2-0 down there, man.
Yeah.
You called a Rain state championship last year. Now you call a Mandarin state championship this year. Bottom line, in 2019, Jacksonville, if you're in the state title game, you need to get on 1010XL. You need Andrew Gibson to call your game.
It was fun, man. It really was. And, it's interesting. I got down there super early. I actually got down to Camping World Stadium about 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon. The game didn't start till 8. We were on at pregame at 7, and I was watching the Northwestern Armwood game.
Okay.
And Northwestern put it on them. And I, Northwestern, actually Miami Northwestern played Columbus. Columbus beat them in week 2. And, I mean, think about this. This team that Mandarin beat was 14-0, mm-hmm. and they rolled through people. And people were like, well, yeah, but who did they play? They played the 8A competition in South Florida. That's no slouch at all. So for Mandarin to win that game in really a shootout, 37-35, it's interesting. I talked to a few guys in the press box prior to the game, and I was just asking their thoughts on it. Some of the guys that had covered Columbus and one of our friends that does one of the Florida high school football websites, and I said, what do you think about the game? And he said, this is going to be the high school version of Rams versus Chiefs.
Wow.
And it turned out.
Was that Wilson? Was that Josh?
It was.
Yeah, Josh's a good dude.
He is. And
former intern here at 1010XL.
That's right. Yeah. He's a really good. He's lost a ton of weight.
Yeah, Josh. Yeah, he has.
He told me to tell you, Hacker, I've lost like 100 pounds.
Yeah, he used to intern with Beef in the mornings for the drill.
Wow, I didn't know
that. Way
back
in the day.
But anyway, it turned out to be 37-35. I have the stats right in front of me. Carson Beck, 329, 5 touchdowns. Oh, by the way, the other quarterback for Columbus, Brandon McDuffie, 293 and 5 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Both quarterbacks threw 5 touchdowns.
It was fun to watch. And the fact that Duran Wiley from Reigns was down there to watch the game. There's a photo, Wiley with his, medal, Ramsey with his medal, too. Duval County Public Schools winning state championships. We're going to hear from both Duran Wiley of Reigns and Bobby Ramsey of Mandarin coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Brent Beard coming up later in the 9 o'clock hour, talking college football, the college football playoff, among many other things on the docket with Brent Beard. But coming up next, back into the world of the National Football League, George Reister, former tight end for the Jacksonville Jaguars, now does a lot of social media, hosts his own show, The Unafraid Show, where he breaks down everything in the world of sports. We'll talk to a former Jaguar, get his perspective on what has happened in 2018 and what, if anything, can be done to fix it in time for next year. Jaguar fans, your former tight end George Reister is next on XL Primetime.
XL Primetime with Joe C. and Hacker, keeping the lights on talking sports. Built by Preferred Builders, this is XL Primetime on 1010XL.
XL Primetime right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. It is a Tuesday night in Jacksonville, Florida, and we are glad you are with us. There is a lot going on in the world of football, both at the college level and the National Football League. The playoff is set. Bowl matchups actually beginning on Saturday. And, of course, in the NFL, the playoff picture beginning to take shape. Unfortunately, that does not include the Jacksonville Jaguars. Speaking of those Jaguars, let's catch up with a former Jacksonville Jaguar, friend of the program, former tight end George Reister, always kind enough to join us here on XL Primetime. George, how are you?
Man, I'm doing well, man. Out here, it finally stopped raining out here in California. It's a little chilly, 60-degree day, but, you know, I'll manage.
You know, George, yeah, we've been battling the weather here, too. I'm actually battling a little bit of a cold. It's amazing. When it gets below 55, Floridians just can't handle that, George. I'm now battling a head cold.
Oh, man, dude, it is bad. I remember when I was playing in Jacksonville, we had a game against San Francisco. I forget which year it was. It might have been like 05 or 06, and it was freezing outside. It was one of the coldest days in Jacksonville. It was like 37, 38 degrees.
I remember it well. I remember being at that game, and it was very cold in the upper deck, believe me. Former Jaguar tight end George Reister here with us. George, let's talk about your former team. Yikes. Everything that's gone on here, 4-9, officially eliminated from the playoffs, all the personal fouls and the undisciplined play. George, what have you made of this Jaguar team this year?
That the mistake started last, I think it was February or March. That's when the first mistake was made. That's when they re-signed Blake Bortles. Sorry, extended Blake Bortles. And so many people pointed to the fact, oh, well, they made it to the AFC Championship. You don't change it, even though you don't think that he's a franchise quarterback. Well, that's the same thing the Chicago Bears did with Jay Cutler. You don't just pay a guy because you don't have anything else. You try to find tenable solutions. I mean, think about it. During training camp, they could have traded for Teddy Bridgewater the same way that the Saints did. They could have gone after a number of free agents. I mean, even Case Keenum, who I'm not like too high on, is still better than Blake Bortles. I mean, and when you look at his numbers are almost identical to his last season numbers. So you would think that some people want to blame the defense, but in reality, it's not just the defense. Like, they were playing at a historic level, and now they're just playing like an average NFL defense. But when the offense can't control field position and give you opportunities, then it makes your defense look that much worse when they're just playing average instead of spectacular.
You know, George, again, George Reister here with us, former Jaguar tight end. Catch his show, Unafraid Show. We'll tell you all about it coming up in just a moment. George, Blake Bortles, absolutely the quarterback position. Even Cody Kessler the last two games has not been very good. But I go to the undisciplined play, whether it's all the personal fouls, whether it's Leonard Fournette, a team captain, running across the field to get into a fight in Buffalo. And then he has the altercation with the fan in Tennessee. He says a racial slur was said. If that's the case, that's despicable, and I don't blame Fournette for getting in an altercation there. But and then you had the London situation with the guys with the huge bar tab. I mean, that is not the kind of conduct you would see from a team that was ready to go to the Super Bowl.
you are 100% right about that. I mean, and truth be told, is that players have to police themselves. But this type of undisciplined behavior, it stems from, I mean, like, you have to point to the coach on some of this, because it's what's allowed. Because if the standard of excellence is what is required, then players will live up to that. I mean, whether they're elementary school kids, high school kids, college young men, or grown professional men, they will live up to the standard that is expected for them. So as a head coach, when you have all these incidents, you can't just point to the players. You got to point at yourself and say, hold up, what am I allowing that is, or what are me and my coaching staff doing that is contributing to this behavior?
George, there's been a thought here in Jacksonville. Really, Tom Coughlin did a radio interview on our station a couple of weeks back, and that's when it really started, talking about the philosophy of this team, the tough physical running game and the tough defense and the blue-collar almost atmosphere. And you look at around the league, whether it's the Rams, the Saints, the Chiefs, the Steelers, the Chargers, there's balls going all over the place. There's 30 and 40 points being scored at will. And my question is, and you played the game, you tell me, how can the Jaguars' philosophy of tough running and aggressive defense work so well last year, and yet it's not working this year, and seemingly every team now is putting 40 and 50 points on the board? Can the NFL change that drastically in one off season?
I mean, they would have to change the rules, first of all. I think it's a combination of the rules. You have wide receivers, backs who are the elite ones, much more skilled, and you have and you have defenses can't be as physical. So I think that's the first thing. But also, I think you are seeing teams put a premium as opposed to the defensive side, which is pretty much the same philosophy as Jack Del Rio had when I was playing there, which was, we're going to run the ball and we're going to play tough defense. Okay, that's fine and dandy until you look at the stats. Until you realize that the majority of the snaps, like 65% of the snaps in the NFL, are taken in the shotgun now. And yes, you have to be able to run the ball effectively, but even more than that, you have to be able to sling the ball around and sling it around in inclement weather. So the idea that defense wins championships, it is a complete lie. I mean, think about when you saw the SEC championship with Alabama and Georgia. Was that defense that won the game, or was it the offense of Alabama that picked it up and then their defense was able to get a few key timely stops?
No, that's exactly what it was. That and the combination of Jalen Hurts coming in and probably costing two of the Heisman Trophy, which we'll get to in a moment.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my point that I've been saying is, I don't know, like, take this offseason as an example. Can Jacksonville get enough personnel in here to change their offense from what it is now, ground and pound, to an aerial attack in one off season?
Yes, all you need is a quarterback and a coordinator who can do that, and a head coach, and the head coach being committed to that. I'm gonna give you a perfect example. Is the air raid offense, which Mike Leach runs at Washington State, which Cliff Kingsbury ran at Texas Tech, which you see a similar version of that at Oklahoma. It's not based upon speed like everybody thinks, like you're not speeding it up. They're based upon controlling the clock and controlling the game by continuously picking up first down. Their mode is just throwing the ball. And it's the same thing that the Patriots do. They hit you with big plays when they can, but the majority of the time they're just staying in second down and manageable, which is six or less, ending in third and short, three or less. Like, these are downs that are much easier to pick up. And when you see teams like the Jaguars that continuously are in, you know, second and nine, and then they get a false start, second and 14, and then you're in third and seven. Like, those are difficult to pick up because a lot of teams have these edge rushers that are difficult to block. complicated schemes. They try to take away your best player. And then if you don't have a quarterback who can drop a dime like you see some of the elite quarterbacks in the league do, you're going to find yourself in a tough spot, and you're not going to win as many games as maybe you should. Like let's take, for example, the Tennessee Titans. So Marcus Mariota would not be considered an elite quarterback from his play so far. However, he is an above-average quarterback. And you've seen over the last couple of weeks, you've seen him make throws when it mattered the most, where the defense didn't play necessarily well, but at the same time, he was able to make enough plays when it counted to get his team a victory.
Couple more moments here with former Jacksonville Jaguar tight end George Reister. You can check him out on unafraidshow.com. We will tell you all about that in just a moment. George, final NFL question. We'll hopefully get you back on to preview the playoffs in a little less than a month, but as it stands right now, best team in the AFC, best team in the NFC, in your opinion?
I think that you still have to go with the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC. Pat Mahomes is something special. Like this dude, like we watched a first-year starting quarterback be elite. Like we didn't watch him mature. We didn't watch him do better. We watched him like put on a show for greatness. Like he may break the single-season touchdown record. And then you also have a guy like, oh, and then in the NFC, I think that you have to go with the Rams still. And even though they lost the game in frigid temperatures in Chicago, as long as they don't have another slip up along the way, they're going to be either playing at home throughout the entire playoffs or in a dome or at home and then in a dome against the Saints. So that is advantageous for them, because when you're a team, like whether you're the Jaguars or whether you're a West Coast team like L.A., like the Chargers or the Rams, it's difficult when you go play in frigid temperatures when you're not used to that.
George, is Sean McVay kind of the guy now? When teams are looking for new head coaches, you always hear, we got to find the next Sean McVay. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, especially being that the league is trending towards offense. Like, you have to have somebody who is innovative and bold, like people who are built out of the same mold as Chip Kelly's and the Bill Belichick's. Like people who aren't willing to play by the book and traditional football, who are willing to do things differently than the status quo. That's the first thing. But the second thing that you have to have is leadership. Like, they have to be able to set the culture, set a way of doing things, and like we talked about earlier, set the expectation. And once that standard is set, then they have to maintain it. And the players, they respect coaches who work hard, who are thoughtful, innovative, and do, you know, and are there in the to grind it out with them.
All right, George, leave us with this. College football playoff is set. Alabama, Oklahoma, you got the Heisman Trophy winner, Kyler Murray, against the guy that a lot of people thought should win the Heisman in Tua.
Nope.
Okay, well, you can comment on that as well. And then Notre Dame and Clemson. I thought of you when the playoff was announced, and I thought George Reister was going to lose his mind if it was Georgia and not Oklahoma.
Oh,
so at least you got your wish, because I know what a big SEC guy you are. But what is your thought about the playoff 2.5 weeks out?
First of all, it had nothing to do with with me not necessarily being an SEC guy. It had to do with the reason why I didn't want Georgia in was for a couple reasons. Number one, their non-conference was laughable at best. It was awful. And I've explained on unafraidshow.com how the playoff is a Ponzi scheme for the SEC, and then they get artificially pushed up the rankings because of these terrible non-conference schedules. And so the first thing is everybody cries about schedule. So Georgia's schedule, their non-conference schedule, was completely inferior. And then you add in the fact that they went down to LSU, got demolished by 20 points,
Yeah, but George, LSU is a tough place to play. Alabama went there right behind them and didn't let them score a point. So, and then you go to the SEC championship, and then you lose a 14-point lead in the second half to Alabama's backup quarterback. So, yes, you are still a top-notch team, but you're not one of the four best, and it's been proven that you can't win it. So that's a, so that's the reason why I'm putting Georgia out. But to go to the Heisman, the person who won the Heisman, Kyler Murray, is the person who deserved to win the Heisman. And the reason why is not only are his stats better, even if you take out the fourth quarter, his stats are still better than Tua's. And the second thing is that Kyler Murray, every single throw he made mattered. Like, he couldn't have a two-interception game. He couldn't not throw for, you know, 350 yards or and a bunch of touchdowns and then not run for another touchdown and another 70 yards as well. And his team went. Like, every throw was of consequence, and it mattered. And when you look at Tua, like, this is no knock on his talent or his ability, but it was shown when Jalen Hurts came in was my point was proven. That every single throw that Jalen made, it didn't have the same consequence, because at no point in time was he ever in danger of losing a game, except for the SEC championship. Like, there was never a time where, like, he couldn't make a whirly bird, whoop-de-doop, throw into coverage, throw a throw that coaches are ordinarily like, no, no, no. Like, he could make those without fear and trepidation, because he knew that his players were better than everybody else that they played, so he didn't have to worry about it. And if he did throw a pick, so what? The defense will stop. So that's why I would have given the Heisman to Kyler Murray, despite Tua changing the way that Alabama played football, which is a huge credit. But to the college football playoffs, I have said it. This was the four I have named in my college football power rankings for like 6 weeks, probably. This was the four that I was pointing to. Everybody called me crazy, and I was 100% right. I was crazy like a fox. But and here's the other thing that I said, that Oklahoma is going to hang 40 points on Alabama.
Wow.
I don't know how many Alabama's going to score. They might score 68. But they are going to score points against Alabama. This offense is unstoppable. It's better than it was with Baker. Like, this is a team that is something special. So I actually think that Oklahoma has a chance to beat Alabama. I'm not going to pick them to beat Alabama. Actually, I am. I'm going to pick them to knock off Alabama. That's
calling your shot. Wow. All right. What about Clemson, Notre Dame, real quick?
Oh, dude, this is going to be, unfair. Clemson is going to boat race Notre Dame and then go into the college football playoff and probably beat Oklahoma. So I like Clemson to win it.
All right, George Royster, former Jaguar tight end. George, it's Unafraid Show, unafraidshow.com. Yes. Tell Jaguar fans what they can expect, what they can look forward to when they go to unafraidshow.com.
On unafraidshow.com, you can expect hard-hitting opinions. It's where sports meets people, life, politics, and everything else.
Former Jaguar tight end George Royster, you can catch him on unafraidshow.com. George, always appreciate you, man. Have a happy holidays, and we'll hopefully catch up and preview the NFL playoffs in a couple of weeks.
Okay, cool.
You know, George Royster called his shot there, did a lot of Jaguar talk, but he also said Oklahoma, in his opinion, is going to beat Alabama. I don't think that's crazy. If you were to ask me which underdog has the better shot, Oklahoma over Bama or Notre Dame over Clemson, for starters, I don't think either underdog is going to win, but who has the better shot? Gibson, I would probably say Oklahoma over Alabama is the better shot of happening than Notre Dame over Clemson.
Yeah, I would say so. I think, a lot of times coaches are going to praise the other team. They're not going to really give you anything. Oh, well, they're weak in this area. Most of the time it's the superlatives about the team. And Nick Saban said the Oklahoma offense is one of the best offenses he's ever seen. So you think about that with Kyler Murray, the Heisman Trophy winner. Absolutely, you could see an upset. I'm not sure I see it, but I could see possibly others thinking that it could happen.
We're still a ways away from the playoff, but bowl season gets underway Saturday, including your alma mater, App State's in a bowl game Saturday night.
The New Orleans Bowl. It's a pretty cool trip. I mean, to get to go down and play in New Orleans, it'll be good. And looking forward to hopefully another win in the bowl game.
Is your head coach coaching? He left for Louisville.
No, he'll be he's with Louisville now, and he's trying to take all the guys that he can with him. Which
I see. I sense some bitterness there.
Well, you know, look, he did a great job with us, but you know, he's not our coach anymore. You want to see us get a new coach, and I think we will hire one by Thursday.
Yeah, five bowl games actually kick off the bowl season on Saturday. We'll talk Heisman. We'll talk bowl season. We'll talk college football playoff with our friend Brent Beard. That's coming up next. XL Primetime on a Tuesday here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
XL Primetime, presented by Welcome to Rockville on 1010XL.
21 minutes until 10 o'clock. Glad you're with us, XL Primetime, 1010XL, 92.5 FM with Andrew Gibson, the hacker, Ryan Green with you. The Heisman Trophy in the books. A lot of the coaching carousel in the books, although there's still some jobs that are open. And bowl season begins on Saturday, and really begins Saturday and goes all the way through the first week of January. With that, let's welcome in our friend Brent Beard. You can follow him on Twitter at Brent Beard, B-E-A-I-R-D. You also see him pretty frequently this time of year over on First Coast News. Brent, how are you tonight, bud?
Doing fine, and good to be with you and Andrew. We'll be back on First Coast News on Thursday night as we'll start looking at some different issues, including the bowl season. And look, I know there's not a lot of excitement about Saturday, but the good thing about it is you got to start somewhere, A, and then B. What that means is we'll basically have ball virtually starting next Tuesday, either every night or every other night for a while. So that's the best part about it.
Brent, you're a Heisman voter. You're also an alum of the University of Alabama. Did Tua get the business on Saturday night?
Well, I voted for him. I voted for him one, and Kyler Murray two, and Dwayne Haskins three. I think all three of them are tremendous. It would have been great if all three of them could have somehow won. I think the thing that bothered me more than anything else is you had 40 voters who left two off the ballot and 27 that left Kyler Murray off the ballot. I get it if you want to put Will Greer or Gardner Minshew or Mackenzie Milton or ETN or someone like that on there, but when you leave off either one or two of the finalists, people in the Heisman Trust need to go back and take a look at some of these guys who are voting and whether they ought to continue to have that vote. That's the thing that really concerned me as much as anything else. Now, obviously, this will give Nick Saban, the Alabama defense, a lot of bulletin board material over the next few weeks. But that was my main concern about it, was how do you leave one of the two finalists off your ballot? That's unbelievable.
And, Brent, you tell me this. You're a voter, man. Everybody talks about don't turn your vote in until after Championship Saturday. And I agree with that. But this is not a Championship Saturday award.
No, it's not.
This is an entire season award, and you cannot tell me, or you can, I just won't believe you, not you, Brent, but anybody in particular, that if Jalen Hurts doesn't have to come in, meaning if Tua doesn't get hurt, and Tua leads them to victory against Georgia, Tua wins the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah.
I think Kyler Murray got it because Jalen Hurts came in, led Bama to victory, and Murray did what he did against Texas, which to me means people put so much on Championship Saturday and forgot the previous 3.5 months.
Well, the award is an entire resume award. it's the entire season. I mean, I get the fact of that there's some importance in there, but it's frankly one of 13 games. It's what it is, and I think the two stats that really amazed me were in quarterback snaps. Dwayne Haskins had 962, Murray had 785, and Tua had like 575. I mean, that's incredible efficiency. I think the other thing that penalized Tua was as few times as he played in the fourth quarter. But that is not a goal for Saban in Alabama, is to see him see how long he can play. They want to get some of these other quarterbacks ready to play, and I know there's been a lot said about the comparison of the defenses that Tua went against and the defense that Murray went against, but I agree with you totally. What has to be taken into heavy consideration here is what do these two guys do over the course of the season?
Yeah, Brent, I'm glad you went there with the defenses, because I was going to ask you about that. I've got this in front of me. I mean, Murray did not face a single Power 5 defense ranked in the top 30 in scoring defense all year.
Right.
Tua faced four of the top 30 Power 5 defenses in his final five games. What do you think about the defensive argument there?
Well, I think it certainly holds water. Now, look, Murray is unbelievable, and there is no denying that. But the two best defenses that he went against, now this is scoring defense, which may be a little bit different than what you've got, Andrew, is Iowa State was 36 and TCU was 44.
Mm-hmm.
No one else was any better than 52, and again, Oklahoma's defense is in a category all by itself. So absolutely it had an effect on what went on. And listen, frankly, one of the best defenses that Murray probably faced the whole season was Army. And Army almost beat them. We're able to slow the game down. So there's no question the defense has made a big difference.
Brent Beard here with us on XL Primetime. Follow him on Twitter at Brent Beard, BEAIRD. You also see him over on First Coast News. Brent, the coaching carousel still going, but starting to wind down a little bit. Some of the bigger jobs have been filled. What has stood out to you, whether it's Louisville, North Carolina, Georgia Tech, any other job? Take your pick. Give us the one or two highlights, the best hires in Brent Beard's mind to this point.
Well, I think the I don't know what word I want to use with this, and it's not saying they don't know football, but I think Mack Brown going back to North Carolina and Les Miles going to Kansas, I mean, could they have done better with that? Maybe, but I mean, I understand the hire to a degree. I thought Satterfield going to Louisville was one of the better ones.
Yeah, Gibson's pretty bitter about that, Brent.
Yeah, and I understand that, but I think what that says, Andrew, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think Satterfield is one of the best coaches in the nation, frankly.
Yeah, he is.
And for Louisville to get him with those facilities, I think he could be tremendous for them once he's able to restock that roster.
Yeah, and he's a great offensive coach. I mean, he did tremendous things for the App State offense. When I was there, he was the offensive coordinator and was quickly promoted to head coach.
Well, and listen, let me also mention this, and I'm being selfish here, and I hope this doesn't happen, but Manny Diaz, the Miami D coordinator, and Mike Elko, the A&M D coordinator, sometimes it depends on what day it is rumored for the Temple job. Now, that Temple job is a much better job than it used to be. But I'm telling you guys, Miami can't lose Diaz. They're struggling greatly on offense, but he's done a tremendous job on defense. And I would really hate to see him go, frankly. Now, again, you've got Dan Enos is going to be promoted in Alabama. You've still got to find the coordinators at Tennessee, offense coordinator at Tennessee, and also offense coordinator at FSU, Kendall Bryles, and obviously I mean, there's a few others out there at this point that have been mentioned, and that's going to be a very, very important hire for them. The Auburn hire of the Memphis offensive coordinator raised a few eyebrows. Kenny Dillingham, particularly after Malzahn made it clear that he's going to call the plays, which he has been doing, frankly, anyway, and did when Chip Lindsey was there at the last time. So, Hack's right. It's still swirling the carousel is right now with some big-time hires yet to be made.
Brent, Georgia has owned the Peach State. They've actually owned the southeastern part of the country in recruiting for a while, but clearly they've owned the state of Georgia. Jeff Collins to Georgia Tech, if they actually start running a legitimate offense, could Georgia Tech give Georgia any problems with that talent-rich Atlanta area? Could Jeff Collins make an impact there?
He could, absolutely. And Collins Franklin is a good coach. You probably remember him at Florida. He did a pretty good job when he was there. He actually was with Saban back in his early Alabama career. I think Collins does a pretty good job, but you're right. That's the big one. There is, can he recruit? And I think he can better than Paul Johnson. And Paul Johnson recruited for that system, and he even admitted that he would recruit basically three stars and develop them. And frankly, did a good job. And by the way, you mentioned Georgia recruiting, them getting Clay Welb, the five-star offensive lineman at Oxford, Alabama. That was a rather big deal.
It's almost laughable what Kirby's doing on the lines of scrimmage and recruiting. I mean, it really is. They're getting anybody they want on the O-line and the D-line.
Well, see, look, if I was Kirby, I would tear up whatever money that Sam Pittman is making as the offensive line coach who came over from Arkansas. And I would double or triple his salary, because you got two things going on here. One is, and guys, how rare is this? You've got Pittman only recruits these kids, but he's developed them in one of the better offensive lines anywhere in the nation at this point. That they're up there with offensive line with Oklahoma in their offensive line. But again, whatever he pays Pittman, it's not enough.
Brent, what about you mentioned this briefly a second ago. What about the offensive coordinator spot for Florida State? 24/7 Sports has reported that Cliff Kingsbury was the top of their list. Obviously, he's at Southern Cal. Hugh Freeze was somewhere on that list as well. Is it going to be Kendall Briles now that Hugh Freeze is not on the list?
Well, Larry Fedora is still in there, too.
Right.
Yep. Now, again, how is – and what you're seeing now – there's a lot of these coaches who are going and reinventing themselves as coordinators, which is a good move in some ways, which is one of the reasons that you are seeing this kind of movement. But I think that's the two right now. But again, and I don't blame them. FSU people are now this Briles is the son of Art, who is at Baylor. Now, he was not the head coach then, but some of the Florida State people are not happy about that connection that he was at Baylor with all that scandal that was going on. Fedora may end up getting that job, but look, as both of you know, I mean, tomorrow, we're a week away, guys, from signing day, and you've got to have somebody in place at that point, in order for that to happen. By the way, Butch Jones going to Maryland after going to Alabama, trying to restart his career too.
Brent Beard. Brent, we're out of time. We will do it again next Tuesday on the eve of the first signing day of this recruiting cycle, buddy. Looking forward to it.
Can't wait, guys. Thanks, Hank. Thanks, Andrew. And by the way, tremendous job on the state championship games by the station. Proud of what we did, very much. And Andrew, take a bow for that. And we both know how we, but they're standing. We both know how hard it is for schools in public schools to to win championships. Really proud of both those schools.
Brent Beard here with us every Tuesday. Follow him on Twitter at Brent Beard, B-E-A-I-R-D. You also see him on First Coast News. He's right. You did a hell of a job with that.
I appreciate it, man. It was a lot of fun. And doing those games, I mean, think about this. You know, up until last year when Reigns won the title, there had only been one Duval County Public School Reigns in 97 to win the title. Now there have been four.
Yeah, we're going to dedicate the 10 o'clock hour to both Duran Wiley, the head coach of Reigns, and Bobby Ramsey, the head coach of Mandarin. You will hear exclusive interviews with them coming up in just a moment. With Andrew Gibson, the hacker Ryan Green with you on the doorstep of the 10 o'clock hour. It's XL Primetime, 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
XL Primetime, presented by Welcome to Rockville on 1010 XL.
Speaking of Welcome to Rockville, it returns to Jacksonville's Metropolitan Park May 3rd, 4th, and 5th, 2019. The lineup is simply outstanding. Shinedown, Papa Roach, The Prodigy, Incubus, Rob Zombie, Chevelle, The Cult. That's just a few of the dozens of bands that will descend here to Jacksonville and Metro Park on May 3rd, 4th, and 5th. For tickets, go to welcometorockvillefestival.com. That's welcometorockvillefestival.com. Or be caller 4 right now, 641-1010, and JJ will hook you up with a pair of tickets, general admission tickets, for the 2019 edition of Welcome to Rockville, May 3rd, 4th, and 5th at Jacksonville's Metropolitan Park. With Andrew Gibson, the hacker Ryan Green with you, we're going to dedicate the 10 o'clock hour to high school ball. Two public school state champions in Duval County. You'll hear a conversation with Duran Wiley, the head coach of the Reigns Vikings, the 4A state champion. You'll hear a conversation with Bobby Ramsey, head coach of the Mandarin Mustangs, the 8A state champion. Gibson, you called the 8A state championship. Certainly was a great time had by all.
It was fantastic. And let me tell you this. You've made the trek from Jacksonville to Orlando a bunch.
To go to Disney probably 10 times a year for the last 5 years. And I'll be doing it again on Friday as our Disney season will once again start back up.
A lot of our listeners driving around Jacksonville right now, they've made that trip too from Jacksonville to Orlando. I can tell you guys, having made that trip this past weekend, the adult superstore group has really invested a lot of dollars into the signage from Jacksonville to Orlando.
Did their advertisements work for you?
It got me a little interested.
Okay,
to be honest,
but it didn't get you in the store.
No, though. It didn't get me in the store. But I probably counted 7 of those billboards.
There are a lot of them. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's fun going to Orlando. You got the I-4 eyesore, which apparently is actually starting to get built up again. They had that abandoned building forever that I think somebody bought, and they're now fixing that up. I usually hate I-4,
yeah.
Particularly when you get around the Amway Center in downtown Orlando. It's just awful. But I guess I'm so used to it at this point, it doesn't bother me as much. But real quick, you saw Bobby Ramsey and Mandarin win a state title. I know you enjoyed calling that game.
It was awesome. It was one of the thrills of my broadcast career to be able to call the first ever Mandarin State Championship game. That entire team is special. Carson Beck is going to do great things at Alabama and beyond. And the entire team, DeMario Douglas, 4 touchdown catches, a pick on defense. I mean, congratulations to Bobby. Congratulations to Reigns. Both schools were outstanding.
The next hour will be dedicated to high school football. You'll hear from Duran Wiley, the head coach of the Reigns Vikings. You'll hear from Bobby Ramsey, the head coach of Mandarin. Both men led their teams to state championships. It is XL Primetime on a Tuesday, 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. Duran Wiley of Reigns is coming up next. Reigns, a 2-touchdown victory over Coco. They are back-to-back state champions. Pleased to be joined now by Duran Wiley, the head coach of the Reigns Vikings. Coach, a big congratulations, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. After that victory last night, I'm great.
Coach, back-to-back. I mean, I know it happened less than 24 hours ago, but my goodness, I mean, has that sunk in, what you guys have accomplished in the last calendar year?
Well, yeah, it did this morning. I think I woke up, and I just woke up with this feeling, and it felt great. And, you know, the back-to-back thing just keeps coming to my mind. I tell you what, it's a great accomplishment, you know, for the kids, the community, and the school.
We're talking with Duran Wiley, head coach of the Range Vikings. And, you know, I want to go back real quick, Coach, because I'm sure you use this at some point as the season unfolded. But go back to the state title a year ago, and I love the way you told us the story before as we were out at High School Media Day going all the way back to August. But what they were able to do to win that one, I'm sure, helped you win this one.
Well, no doubt. You know, those guys last year set the tone. As, you know, the seniors that graduated, they left the guys something, you know, some nuggets, man, to, you know, how to prepare, how to, you know, how to, you know, execute. So we had some momentum, but so we were really dependent on guys, the new guys who were stepping into the picture to step up the game and understand, yeah, you know, let's carry the torch and get it going. That was one of our hurdles this year, you know, asking guys to, you know, who wasn't there last year, or who didn't have a major role to be focused. That was one of the major hurdles this year. Because we knew in the middle of the year we had something special. You know, you can see the guys on the road against those big power schools like Mandarin and you know, who was that, Sandalwood and Tallahassee Lincoln. They were starting to perform very well. So we kind of felt some things then.
Duran Wiley of Reigns here with us. They are back-to-back state champions after a victory last night in the 4A state title game over Coco. Coach, there are 46 4A high schools in the state of Florida, and you're better than all of them for the second consecutive year. I mean, what was the message on the field after the game? What was the message in the postgame locker room? And along with that, what was it like to have your former teammate, now NFL Hall of Famer Brian Dawkins, in attendance one night ago?
Well, the message after the game was just, savor the moment, you know, just you know, reflect a little bit, guys, and take it all in, and you know, and let's enjoy it, and just understand this is what it's all about. You know, finishing the race, finishing the journey, and so that was my message to him last night. And the guys who were to the seniors, I told them, man, I love them, and it's been a great ride. I told the underclassmen, hey, we'll enjoy, you know, this victory into 2019. And then you know, it starts all over again because again, it's a new year, so we got to put a new team together. And Brian Dawkins, man, it was awesome having him out there to, witness, us accomplish something that's so huge. And he was all into it too. He was very, he was wrapped around the game and all of the emotion of it.
Yeah, it's really neat to have a guy like that come back, be able to enjoy it, want to be part of it. He was tweeting about it. He was so fired up. I retweeted one of them, proud to be a Reigns Viking. Stand up, Jacksonville. Show these quality young men and coaches the love they deserve for what they've accomplished. They've overcome so much this year and now stand as history makers. So it was really cool to see that. Now go to the game, Coach. Now, you guys stopped Coco, held him to 3 points total on three possessions inside the 10-yard line in the third quarter. That is just incredible. And by the way, fans, I'm not talking about Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm talking about holding Coco down. Talk about those defensive stands.
Well, those stands were huge. You know, block punt, a guy makes a tackle and puts his hand around the ball to cause a fumble. You know, you're talking about playmaking, and you know the defense all year has stood tall in that capacity, just making plays down the stretch. I can remember the Tallahassee Lincoln game. You know, offense was struggling, and we got two pick sixes, and you know, and it was just like, man. So, you know, I wasn't shocked, but I tell you what, we had to lean on those guys a lot last night because we sputtered heavily in the third quarter offensively. And that's when the defense has said, hey, we're going to just play lights out. And, you know, and those red zone stands, right, you know, 10 going in, man, they really stood tall. And even down the stretch to seal the game, you know, a pick six. And then, you know, we kick the ball off. And then Eric Horn gets the last pick to just seal the deal for the back-to-back state champion.
Coach, there's not a lot of coaches in our area, and for that matter, the entire country, that win one state title. You've now won two in back-to-back years. You've done it at your alma mater. And, oh, by the way, you had an NFL Hall of Famer on the sideline that was your former high school teammate rooting you guys on, and Brian Dawkins, as we've talked about. Have you taken time out for yourself today to kind of reflect? I mean, you're a young guy, and what you've accomplished in a relatively short amount of time is unbelievably impressive.
Yeah, I did. I sat home all day today, and I've just, you know, just let it just soak in and let me allow myself to just, you know, talk to my kids, my wife, and just have a good time with them and just take it all in. It's kind of surreal, man. You know, because again, like you just said, you know, your alma mater, you know, you got your teammate on the sideline, Hall of Famer Brian Dawkins, and then you win it back to back. You know, in this victory, it felt different. It seemed like everything came full circle. You know, and it's unbelievable to just, you know, take it all in. But yeah, it feels good. And you think about all the hard work you put in with the coaches and the players, man. We are about as consistent staff as you can have, man. We come there every day to work and get better, and we ask the kids to do the same thing. We push them to be great. So it is something that, as I reflect today, I just felt like, you know, the hard work pays off. You know, and here's the deal: it may not come when you want it, but hey, man, it sure comes on time, and when you definitely, you know, when you need it to, you know, because again, you know, as we've been on this road with bowls and those games, those close games, man, it feels sure to be on the other side.
Yeah, putting the work in pays off, and those kids now know it, and they'll remember it forever. Couple more minutes with Duran Wiley, head coach of the state champion Reigns Vikings. You know, just mention a couple of your kids, if you don't mind. Brandon Marshall, one of the guys that will leave Reigns, is the all-time leading rusher.
Absolute stud.
Stud. He was just one of the many that you had to rely on this year.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, Brandon Marshall, you know, I call him Mr. Billboard. He is the guy, man. I don't, you know, what better, you know, people rave about his playing ability. I'm going to just tell you guys, listen. If you ever got around the kid and hung out with him and just watch him in school, in the classroom, he is a class act. And that's what I just go crazy about, you know, because, again, I ask my guys, I say this all the time to them, I want you to be a better person than you are player, because one's going to last longer than the other. And, you know, I tell them all the time, you know, be a class act, man. And, you know, and he embodies all of that, man. I tell you what, and his accomplishments on the field is nothing short of amazing, man. He has done a great deal of work, working on his skill set. When he first got there, he couldn't really catch very well. But I tell you what, every day after his practice, he works on his catching and running routes with the receivers to make himself a complete back. And I appreciate him for that. You know, we got some other guys, man. I tell you what, you know, Matt Drayton, to name a few, Jamon Handy, you know, those guys, Brian Maddox. And we leaned on those guys heavily, the small offensive linemen there. We lean on those guys, you know, in the run game to block for Brandon. You know, and I'm going to give a shout-out to my quarterbacks, Baron Coates and Ja'Cory Rivers, man. They really stood tall. And Baron Coates threw the winning, you know, that touchdown to Baron on the wheel route. I mean, touchdown to Brandon Marshall on the wheel route, man. It kind of just made it absolutely, you know, pandemonium in the stadium. And the defense, I won't even name them all. I'll just say that whole entire unit over there. All year long, those guys have set it down. And I'm proud of those guys because I thought the defensive effort last year could not be, you know, outdone. But you know what? Yesterday, man, I tell you what, I saw something. I don't know if I could say that this one was not the great one last night, the defense performance that we put on.
Duran Wiley, the head coach of Reigns. Coach, the beginning of this year had nothing to do with the football team, but you had that tragic situation on opening night against Lee with the shooting, and which meant that you had to have some games moved to Thursday afternoons and Saturday mornings and everything those kids had to go through with that tragic event out there. But then to have it all come in full circle and win a state title and bring a championship to that community, I mean, that's a great story, Coach.
Well, I don't think God makes any mistakes. I know he doesn't, to be exact. And, you know, what we went through the first game of the year was a tragedy, man. You know, the incident kind of took a lot out of me, and as we lost too, so by one point, it was a really that night was very, very painful, you know. But those kids, you know, the following Monday, we spoke about everything in detail, and you know, you could just see the look in the eyes that they wanted to not discount what happened, but they wanted to just move on and play ball to you know, get everybody's mind off of a senseless act. And, you know, each week after we game two, you could just see the focus in guys. They came out, and every day they worked. and we ask them to push yourself. And again, you know, and we ask them, don't let anything, you know, take away from our Friday night lights. You know, and again, we had to make some adjustments in our schedule, and that was tough, too.
Yeah.
Saturday morning at 10.
Trying to get those kids to wake up.
Yeah, man, it was brutal, you know. But somehow, some way, we, you know, the kids came to work. And, you know, I call it, you know, coming to the workplace with your hard hat and your lunchbox, and they got it done. And the coaches were there, were stepping away, pushing and making sure guys were attentive and, you know, having attention to detail. So it was a big deal. And last night, like you said, it just came full circle for us last night. And we were very proud, man. I'll tell you, it was a very happy moment on the bus ride home.
Before we say goodbye, are there any special celebrations planned that will be at the school? We've got plenty of people that have already chimed in that want to be able to celebrate this one.
Well, no doubt. We hadn't got anything started. Monday's going to be a big day. So I know I'll be talking to you guys about what we have coming up, because there's going to be some celebrations. And we ask those who want to be a part to come celebrate with us and enjoy the accomplishment. Because I tell you what, you guys said it earlier, it's a heck of an accomplishment. Back-to-back state titles for a public school is big in Jacksonville.
Well, one down, one to go. Coach, when I talked to you on Tuesday, you were planning to go back down to Orlando to watch Mandarin tomorrow night. Is that still on the itinerary for you?
No doubt about it. I'm going to leave first thing in the morning. I'm going to watch a few earlier games, but the big one for me is to go watch the Mandarin Mustangs try to become the second school in the public school history to win a state title. I'm rooting for those guys. I want them to win. They've had a heck of a year. They got a heck of a coach, and their players are outstanding. And we'll be rooting those guys on. I got about five coaches already down there waiting on me to come in the morning, and we're going to sit in the stand and see can they pull off the inevitable and become a state champion in Class 8A.
You want to talk about a Jacksonville guy? Duran Wiley just won a state title. He's now going back to the same stadium to root on another Duval County Public School. Coach, I think that's a great, great thing.
Yes, sir. I believe so as well.
Well, have fun, celebrate it, soak it in, and as you have said often, don't let those kids ever take that for granted. That was special, and I always tell you that going back to the Welton Coffee days, as special as that one was, back-to-back this go-around, pretty dang special. Congratulations, Coach.
I thank you guys a lot, man. Thanks for having me.
And there you go, Duran Wiley of the Raines Vikings, winners of 13 games in a row, running absolute roughshod over their four playoff opponents. And the Raines Vikings are now back-to-back 4A state champions. A big congratulations to Wiley, his staff over there at Raines, and, of course, those young men who played so hard and so well over this entire football campaign. That was one of the public schools that won a state title. We had another one as well, Mandarin. And head coach Bobby Ramsey brought home the 8A state crown. Coming up next, we'll let you hear from Bobby Ramsey, the head coach of Mandarin, what was their playoff run like? It was certainly magical to watch. There is no question about that. It is a Tuesday night edition of XL Primetime Jacksonville, and we're glad you're with us right here on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
And that is going to do it. Unbelievable. The Mandarin Mustangs last year were 2-8. They lost their last six ball games. And in a year's time, the Mandarin Mustangs have won the state championship for the first time in their 29-year history.
That was Andrew Gibson on Saturday night down at Camping World Stadium in Orlando. The Mandarin Mustangs over an undefeated Columbus team out of Miami, 37-35 Mandarin. An amazing five-game playoff run where they beat a who's who of 8A competition, and they are your 8A state champs here in 2018. Pleased to be joined by the head coach of the Mandarin Mustangs. His name is Bobby Ramsey. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Coach, always appreciate you. Boy, you've been a regular on not only XL Primetime, but Friday Night Lights this year, and we certainly appreciate it. And, man, congratulations. Take us back to Saturday night. Your emotions after winning an 8A state championship.
You know, there's that initial moment of you know, man, are we really about to win this thing? You know, is this really going to happen? And then, from there, it just, I think, seeing the excitement and every, you know, how excited and happy everybody was. I was telling somebody earlier that usually after every game, you're no matter what, it seems like you're dealing with some kind of issue, as minute as it might be. You're probably, you know, whether it's a playing time issue or something maybe went wrong at the concession stand or something. There was literally nothing but just everybody it connected to the entire program, every single fan, just you know, ecstatic, and that was great to see.
Talking with Bobby Ramsey, he is the winning coach of the Mandarin Mustang state champion football team now over Miami Columbus. And, you know, we're going to try and go through the game a little bit, but let's go to that end real quick, Bobby, if you could take us through it. You know, big points on the board. This ends up being, what, a 37-35 game, and then your team had to make a stop late. Take us to that late stage and describe what was going through your mind.
Well, you know, when we were up 16, I kind of played out a worst-case scenario for the last 8 minutes, and every single part of it just about took place. So you're sitting there going, all right, we just got to make one more play. We just got to make one more play on defense. And after they scored, we just walked out there to the, you know, towards the hash marks and just yelled at our guys, hey, just calm down. You just got to make one play. Just got to make one play. Wasn't expecting seat options. Probably were thinking something up the middle to the running back Parrish, or a fade towards number three, towards the corner. So I was a little surprised by the speed option. Our strong safety did a great job of beating the block over there. We had great pursuit going to the ball. And, you know, from there, then you obviously start thinking, okay, we got to get the onside kick and get ready for that.
Well, Coach, you did stop him on a two-point conversion. You held on. 37-35. Again, Bobby Ramsey, the head coach of Mandarin. The reason you guys had 37, I'll have you know, Coach, we were watching the game at the 1010 XL Christmas party. We actually had you on the big screen, basically through the stream, so we were all paying attention. DeMario Douglas, I had a conversation with this young man earlier today. That story is going to run on 1010XL.com tomorrow. On his birthday, DeMario Douglas catches four touchdown passes in the 8A state championship game. Just talk about the performance of that young man on Saturday night, Coach.
He's been that way all year long, so it's at the point now where it wasn't surprising. He's a guy that you know has the whole repertoire at receiver, the ability to run past guys on the vertical stuff, the ability to take the quick slant, make guys miss, get out in the open field, make plays that way. You know, done a really nice job for us in the secondary. So it wasn't, you know, those guys all year long, those three receivers, Mitchell, Darian, and him, nothing they do at this point is out of the ordinary. It's kind of become expected. And when they make plays, it's the norm. And I didn't realize that I knew he had a lot of touchdowns. I didn't realize he had four because those guys are really sort of interchangeable with who's the man on a certain week. Some, you know, each week it kind of changes, but even though they all contribute consistently, it seems like one maybe has a little bit better game than the other one, depending on whatever week it is. So he's a real cool customer, very confident kid, quiet confidence about him, a very intelligent player. You know, he's one of those kids that, you know, from a coaching standpoint, you can kind of have different conversations with him. You know, our kickoff coverage was kind of an issue at times, and you know, he's the guy coming down, going, "Hey, what kickoff are we doing here?" So I'm like, "I gotta check with him and make sure that we're doing what." You know, it's funny. He's like, "Hey, wait, what are we doing on kickoff here, Coach?" I'm like, "Well, you know, his name's Papa." I'm like, "Well, Papa, since I guess I have to clear this with you, but." You know, he's just that kind of player, and I know I've said before, I put him up against anybody in Northeast Florida.
Yeah, I've really loved watching this guy. We're talking with Bobby Ramsey, coach of the state champion Mandarin Mustangs, and I think I've said it to you before. You know, DeMario Douglas just rolls off the tongue. I love the way the dude makes plays, and he's not alone. But let's get to the other half of that. If he's catching four, that means Carson Beck is putting it right in the breadbasket. And you see some of the plays from the other night, and that's exactly what he was doing. How special was it to have him kind of engineering a lot of this from that quarterback position?
He makes a lot of throws that a lot of guys can't make. The third touchdown he threw to Papa. I still kind of have to watch the film, like how'd that thing get through there? How'd he get that ball right on the outside shoulder where only DeMario could catch it? Great command of the offense. It really developed a nice vertical as the year's gone on. The touch he puts on the ball. He threw a lot of passes into the tight windows the other night. That was a really long, athletic defense, and it wasn't going to be easy to make some throws against some of the athletes they had. And he was able to put it on a dime, and our guys caught it. He's been on a roll in the playoffs. I think it's kind of indicative of the way we play, but his plays gone to another level.
Bobby Ramsey of Mandarin. Coach, I think your place among high school coaches has gone to another level. And let's be honest, and you and I have had dozens of conversations about this. When you talk about Bobby Ramsey, you were the guy that coached Derrick Henry, right?
Right.
And now you're the guy that's the 8A state champion in only your second year on the job. So for you personally, what was this run like?
It was just a lot of fun. I mean, it really was just a lot of fun. One of the things about it was the coaching staff, the players. We just really didn't want it to end, and we wanted to make it go as long as it could. We knew it was going to come to an end last Saturday night, one way or the other. But it really just boiled down to just a lot of enjoyment with the group, having fun, wanting it to just go on another week, take that weekend and just live in that week. Don't worry about what was coming next. Don't worry about what happened the week before. A lot of people have talked about us being underdogs and whatnot. I never played that card with the team. I never felt like we were underdogs. I mean, every week I felt people would ask me about the game, and I would say I think it's a winnable game. Confident in my coaches and the preparation that they, put the kids through. I'm confident in players. The players go out there with a real strong belief in what we're doing and each other. And it was just a lot of fun. I mean, I know I kind of repeat myself, but just a great experience with a real special group.
Mandarin Mustangs, 8A state champions over Miami Columbus for the state title game. We got Bobby Ramsey, head coach, with us, Joe C. and Hacker on XL92.5 FM. And I appreciate that you didn't play that card, but I can't imagine that those kids, it didn't creep into their head. When you think of a 2-8 team last year, Bobby, and then you guys just started picking off teams like Apopka and teams that maybe people didn't expect that you would be able to win. So is there a point in the season that you looked at it and you knew they were turning the corner?
Well, we went on the road and won a tough game at DeLand where we had a 2-minute drive late to win the game, and I think that was the first hint that this might be a special year. And then a few weeks later, going on the road and winning at Apopka, I think was definitely a turning point. I've said several times when we were out on the field in pregame, just the energy that was out there. I could tell the players really believed that they could win the game, and based on the way the game had gone the year before, as a coach, you're sitting there going, all right, I think we pumped the kids up. I think we prepared them. I think we've given them confidence, but are they really truly confident? Or are they living in the shadows of what happened last year? And is there any self-doubt in there? And there really wasn't. And the way that game started off, we fumbled the opening kickoff, and it was their homecoming, and all the momentum in the world was against us, and we got a stop. We went down. We scored. And we took a 2-touchdown lead, and I think at that point, everybody in that place was like, dang, this team's no joke, and they came down here to win. And we played a really difficult schedule. Obviously, that's been talked about a lot. And of all the games that were, people would look at our schedule before the season, that was always the one game that people would kind of point to, and it was almost like they were apologizing when they would say, oh, man, you guys have to play Apopka, like, you know, and I think after a while you get tired of hearing that, and you're sitting there going, hey, you know, we work hard, and we feel like we're talented, and we're doing the right things, and, you know, we're not looking for anybody's pity here. We're going to ride a bus 2 hours to go win a football game, and that's kind of been our mentality ever since.
Well, now if you're on the schedule next year, it's, man, you got to play Mandarin. And that's what Mandarin has done this year in winning an 8A state championship. Coach, I texted you Saturday night. I imagine you had a million text messages Saturday night. What I loved about it is the city really came together. Twitter, Facebook. I saw your post on Facebook. I had like 1,000 likes very, very quickly. It was nuts.
I mean, that's a record. That's a record for me. I was kind of excited.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Coach had the picture of the trophy.
Oh, it's awesome.
Hosting the trophy there on the Jumbotron. What was that bus trip back like? All the reaction here locally was very, very positive.
We had a lot of kids that stayed the night either in Orlando with their parents or rode back. But you really couldn't tell the bus wasn't as full because the guys that were there, they made up for it. A lot of guys talking about their role they played in the game, and you know, a lot of guys feeling really good about themselves and really excited. You know, really can't wait to get back. It really was, you know, not just within Mandarin but within Jacksonville. People asked me if I was nervous going into the game, and I really wasn't. I mean, I really felt good about everything. If there was any nerves, it was more just fear of letting people down back around here. Like, man, there's a lot of people that want to see us go down there and win, and we have a lot of people rooting for us. I'm sure Rain felt the same way, and you know, we're like, man, you don't want to come back not having won. I mean, you got the mayor posting stuff on Twitter. It's like, man, it's not really nowhere else to go from there. So you know, the top dog in Jacksonville's rooting on you. You better get it done.
Yeah, Lenny Curry is a diehard sports fan. He loves Jacksonville, and he's going to go top to bottom. He's a diehard Jaguar fan. He's going to bring it all the way down to anybody that's playing for a title, which is very cool. You know, forever, Bobby, and you went from a smaller classification coaching Yulee to, you know, the big dog in 8A. And I always used to think that the 8A belonged to South Florida. It's fair to say that it doesn't. And that North Florida now will have a say, a big say, in what happens in the 8A. How did it swing back in our direction?
Well, I think part of it is, you know, why South Florida has such control of it is just a numbers thing. If there's so many 8A high schools in Palm Beach, Dade, and Broward, I think the Orlando area has gotten a lot better, number one. The programs there are popular, but you look at Dr. Phillips, you look at Winter Park, you look at West Orange. You know, and then you start heading, you know, up to our district. Our district really had conceivable, I mean, almost had four playoff teams. When you look at, you know, us, Flagler, the land got in, and Sandalwood just missed it. And I think you look at the, I think a lot of it probably has to do with the quality of the coaching at those programs, the depth of the coaching staffs, the stability. A lot of those guys started now to be there for several years. And I think there's a physicality, you know, and I don't mean this as a shot at those schools down there, but I think there's a physicality that the teams play with up here that maybe is a little bit more unique than what they play with down there. You know, we felt like when the game was going on that we really, there were guys that were leaving the field for them with a lot of different bangs and bruises. And at halftime of the game, one of our assistants, Coach Murphy, said, Coach, they're not used to this kind of, they're not used to the physical nature of the way we're playing. They're not used to offensive, defensive linemen playing like this. And I think that's probably something that played a role in that. You know, that maybe we play a little bit different brand of football up here than what they're doing down there at some of those schools. And again, I'm not trying to fire a shot across anybody's bow, but if there is a difference, I think maybe when you watch the team play, the style of offenses and things like that. Everybody's spreading the field, but I just think the way that the players play is a little different.
Coach, final one for me. We mentioned now Bobby Ramsey will forever be linked with two things, a state champion, and yes, you were the guy that coached Derrick Henry. I got to ask you, what a 48-hour period it was for you. You win a state title 48 hours earlier. Your former player goes for 238. four touchdowns on national TV, including a 99-yard run against the Jaguars. Probably brought back a lot of memories for you.
Yeah, the one run looked like high school, the 99-yarder. I was like, man, those guys don't want to tackle him any more than, you know, DBs from West Nassau did. I hope Jacksonville does well. I root for Derek to do well in those games. I think it was a lot of fun to see him have that moment. It's kind of been a rougher year for him, and to get the carries and the workload and do it on a national stage like that was great to watch. And I joked with him after our game, just via text. I said, I had to try to do something. I tried to do something to get in the mix. You know, I didn't do it on national TV.
He went 21 miles per hour.
Yeah, it's like a Miata, like when he runs past you. I used to joke in practice when I'd stand behind the defense and he'd break through. It was like, you know, it'd be like that that Marilyn Monroe thing where her dress flies up or something like that. I mean, it would if she was standing there. I mean, he gets moving. Good luck.
Well, the only thing we'll ask is if you could just maybe stop sending the best to Alabama. Will you do that for us, please? You got Carson back for another year. Can you at least help with that, Bobby?
That's just pure coincidence. A lot of times that's just the way it's worked out, and it's fortunate. I mean, it's good for me. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, if you got guys going to Alabama, that means you guys have to have a pretty good football team. So, yeah. I'm not opposed to them staying closer. I mean, believe me, if Derek would have gone to Florida, I would have actually probably been able to see one of them's games in person or Florida State or something like that. So,
well, the amazing thing, Carson's coming back next year. He did everything here, and he's a junior.
Yep,
he'll be back under the Friday Night Lights next year.
Dan Enos, the quarterback's coach, came through last week, and then he came to practice, and he made a comment talking about, you know, when Carson, he said next year with Carson, like him being in Alabama next year, and he didn't have his time frames lined up right. I said, whoa, man, come on now. Like, we got him one more year. Don't speed the process up too much. You know, plan on graduating early. Don't take him before his senior year.
Exactly. All right, now, when will plans come out for celebrations, parades, all that kind of stuff that we can pass on to the Mandarin fans?
They're talking about those things right now. I know there's some different things in the works possible. I know we're several of the guys, we're going down to the News for Jacks on Wednesday and at 7:45. I know that they're probably trying to coordinate some things between Reigns and Mandarin, you know, both teams won to do something there. I'm not exactly sure what plans are in place, but it's probably been more of a hectic week now that the season's over than it was last week going into the game or the week before that. It's a different with all the interest, and really it's just a result of the interest and the support, and our gratitude for that is it just makes it that much more special for the players. And I think I saw four or five of them literally floating across the courtyard today with their medals on. I was like, wait a minute, I had to double check there. So I was like, I think he's floating, but they're just so jacked up and enjoying the experience, and they deserve it. Our senior class in particular, just an awesome group. And the school is excited. The students are excited, and it really did mean something to go down there and represent Jacksonville and Duval County Public Schools. It wasn't something that I wanted to think about a lot, because you didn't want to put the pressure on yourself of being another Duval County school to win a state title. But I was asked about it before the game a lot, you know, what it would mean. And I knew, you know, really, if it happens to be us that wins it, that's great. But I hope it represents on a bigger scale that Duval County Public School football has really, in the last 6-7 years, taken a lot of steps. And there's a lot of strong programs that are doing a lot of really good things. and have been for a while. And, you know, there's going to be more. We're not going to be the last school on the 8A, 7A, 6A level to win one. I'm confident of that.
No, I agree. I really do. We'll celebrate it. Let us know when we can pass on any word. And congratulations again. Super proud of what the Mustangs did. They kicked ass.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. And, you know, again, the way you guys promote the game and the schools in this area, it's tremendous for the programs and the schools and the players. And, you know, they're very lucky to have you guys because it's not every place gets this kind of support. So thanks a lot.
And there he is, Bobby Ramsey, the head coach of the 8A state champion Mandarin Mustangs. What a run from 2-8 last year to a state champion, beating teams from Orlando, Sarasota, and Miami on their way to the first state title in Mandarin Mustang school history. Well, that'll just about put a wrap on this edition of XL Primetime. Thank you guys for hanging out with us tonight here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. As always, we have a ton of people to thank, both Duran Wiley and Bobby Ramsey, the head coaches of Reigns and Mandarin, respectively. You also heard from my friend Mike DiRocco, ESPN.com, previewing the Jaguars and the Redskins in the home finale this Sunday down at TIAA Bank Field. Former Jaguar George Reister came on to talk about the Jags as well as to look at the college football playoff. My friend Brent Beard as well, recapping the Heisman and looking ahead to the bowl games, which, believe it or not, I think there's like 5 bowl games on Saturday as bowl season is just around the corner. Joe Cowart will rejoin me tomorrow night, and we will do it all over again here on XL Primetime from 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock right here on 92.5 FM. Thank you to JJ and Andrew Gibson. Great job as always, fellas. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green, and it goes without saying. But again, thank you, Jacksonville, for listening every weeknight to XL Primetime right here on 1010 AM and 92.5 FM. We hope you have a great remainder of your Tuesday night, and we will do it all over again right here on XL Primetime tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.